It's going to be hot today and air conditioners will be humming, but in a couple of weeks, our furnaces will be doing all the work. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Home Improvement Day today, and our expert Bill McAnally is here. We'll talk about changing filters, getting your furnace serviced, and what other things you might need to do to make sure your furnace is ready for the winter months ahead. Bill will also be answering your questions about heating, cooling, or any other home improvement projects looming on your horizon. You can send your questions by email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or give us a call, 866-780-9100. Join our conversation after the news.
Are we ready to go now?
Yes, now, Bill McAnally. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. You can already feel the autumn chill in the air in the early mornings and the late evenings. And we all know what's coming. Soon, it will be time to turn on the furnace.
And start paying attention.
It's Home Improvement Day today. Our expert, Bill McAnally, is here in the studio with us, apparently not watching the clock very closely.
He's a real smart guy, that Bill.
Good morning, Bill.
Morning.
So, all right, we know we need to turn on the furnace. Most of us don't think about things like furnace filters and getting it serviced until the very last minute when the air fills with yuck, or it just doesn't turn on. So what do we need to be thinking about now?
Well, if you haven't had it serviced yet, you know, you want to call a reputable heating and cooling person, and probably one of the best questions to ask them, you know, even before they show up, is ask them if they've been SAVE trained. It's a training that a lot of them throughout the state of Iowa have been going to. It's a systems adjustment and verification of efficiency. So what they do is when they do come and check your heating and, you know, then they do check your cooling system while they're there. But usually it has to be above, you know, 60 degrees or so to check that. So, but we still have a lot of those days. Price still 90.
I hope so.
No, I hope we don't. when they do come and check your furnace, you know, just make sure that they check, especially if you have an older furnace, you know, that still is a natural draft. That's the type of furnace that has a galvanized exhaust pipe going into a chimney and maybe out throughout the top of the house. Make sure that they check for carbon monoxide, and they just don't look at the color of the flame. The old timers used to, oh, that burning perfect. You know, look at that color. They have to have a pretty good tester to check all of the gases to make sure that the combustion is complete. And if it isn't complete, that's when you have carbon monoxide, because a lot of furnaces don't give off carbon monoxide, or if they do very, very little when they're working, or when they're working well. So it may need a tune-up, and it may actually need a, you know, replacement. The older ones, they'll see if it has a cracked heat exchanger. That's inside the unit, that big box that you see in the basement. That's where the possibility that gases from combustion can mix with the air that, you know, goes back and forth.
So these are the kind of things that I couldn't see if I went down.
No, you wouldn't. And you know, and I think there's still some heating and cooling people that, you know, they don't really look that close. And they haven't been and what it is not that they don't want to, it's they may not have been trained enough. And there is a lot of training available. They have to keep up on their CEUs every year. But the equipment changes so much, and there's very few of those old combustion units still around. There shouldn't be really any of them because there's no use for them. But the newer ones, you can tell that they have a plastic pipe coming out the top. Two of them, usually one for incoming and exhaust air, one for combustion, one for exhausted. And the thing that you may want to do is just make sure that, you know, there haven't been any nests built in there, that if there's a screen that was, you know, applied by the heating and cooling person on the outside of it, make sure that it's clean, make sure that the trees are you know, cleared away, the brush is cleared away. Make sure that if, let's say, we get a flash snow, you know, just a real quick one, and we get some wind, make sure, you know, to always go back and check and make sure that there's no drifts that come in and can possibly block it. Make sure you haven't stored something against it. It seems like that seems to be sometimes a place where they put the extra lawn chairs or something. Make sure that those are cleared away. But down in the basement, you know, make sure usually – you know, our heating and cooling in Iowa is in the lower level. But in the basement, you know, go into that mechanical room, kind of do a cleanup. We never talk about that as is the mechanical room is not supposed to be a storage room. You're supposed to be able to get to the electrical panel, you know, where your fuses and breakers are, and you're supposed to be able to get all the way around your heating and cooling system, you know, for service. But yet, you know, in some cases, you know, there could be a possibility of a fire. So you want to be able to keep everything around your water heater and your furnace away. Put it into another room. That should never be a storage room either for anything like paints or chemicals. You know, I went into a house one time and immediately walked in. It seemed like you could smell 2,4-D. I mean, it was just terrible. Well, they had containers of weed killer down right next to the furnace, and they had an intake from the furnace for that room. Wow. Right there. So it's getting throughout the whole house. So you want to make it easy for this person to go down and you know, and take a look at it. And what they'll do is a lot of times is they will just come in and, you know, they'll check your filter. And a lot of times they haven't been changed since the last time you had them come and take a look at it. But we've gone through a kind of an education with filters. For a while, we were putting in these huge, you know, super hydrostatic ozone, all this, you know, gobbledygook stuff. And what we started to find out was that we were putting in filters that, yeah, they were catching everything, but they were also stopping the air. So a person that really understands, your heating and cooling person, should understand and be able to tell you your furnace should have this type of a filter and not just go out and buy one. What they have is it's called a MERV rating. Excuse me. It's a minimum efficiency reporting value. That's what that MERV is. And then when you buy a filter, it usually has like a MERV number on it. And they usually go from like, say, 1 to 12. Usually something between 4 and 8 is usually good enough for Iowa. You just change them more often. So you don't need to go out and buy these $30 filters because you're trying to stop all these pollens. If you do have indoor air quality issues, yes, you want to step it up, but you want to make sure if you go to a higher MERV rating, these higher numbers on these filters, that your furnace can handle that. Because then what you'll start noticing is rooms that are – the temperatures are wrong, you know, say a second-story bedroom. All of a sudden now it's cooler. It's because that poor furnace can't move the air because the filter's either clogged because you haven't changed it, or maybe it is too high of an efficiency. So, you know, that's it. And so if that furnace filter is hard for you to get in and out, then have that person fix that. And then they do have little magnetic covers that can go over the top of the ductwork where the furnace filter usually is. A lot of times they pull out or pull out going up or sideways. A lot of the companies have these little magnetic placards that cover the filter to make it even seal better. But on that it has the dates, and then you can, you know, make sure that you actually keep track, because it'll, you know, it's like your driver's license. All of a sudden, when you know you get stopped, you find out you're 2 years, you know, out. Yeah, you know, that those kind of things.
So, do you feel like getting your furnace serviced is something that you need to do every year?
I do.
I do.
Now, I haven't had my furnace done, but I have a geothermal heating and cooling system. So I don't, you know, I'm all electric. I don't have the, you know, the combustion issues, things like that. But the last time that I had it done, I've got a really good person in around Fort Dodge that looks at my stuff for me. And he actually has an electrical background rather than, you know, heating and cooling. So he really looks at the electrical side of it and makes sure everything's working perfectly. And some units actually you can plug in, they call them a banana. Other people call them different things, but they can plug in a diagnostic tool and they can look back and see how your heating and cooling unit has actually been performing and at what efficiency, you know, how much electricity, you know, the fan may have used. Because the federal government says that our heating and cooling costs are roughly half of what our monthly utility bills. Now, I'd be mad if my heating and cooling costs was half of it. This pie chart that comes out every year, it actually is getting – the heating and cooling is going way down, like in a pie chart. The actual pie of the heating and cooling is getting smaller. what's going way up is all of our electronics. Mm. You know, that's what's chewing up our electricity. But you don't hear too many people say, you know, we need to start cutting off our DVD, you know, DVR or whatever, all that stuff.
Some people talk about it. But
well, yeah, you might. So, but I got to DVR everything. So,
so if you are in a position where you need a new furnace, we're not going to try to cover all the different possibilities today. But it's a little overwhelming when you start to look into that world.
It is.
What kind of a guide can you use? Where do you start?
Well, you know, there again, you just start doing your research and ask your friends, you know, who they've had do their work. And one thing you want to ask is if somebody says, yeah, I will, you know, give you a price for installing a new heating system. And ask them, well, what about my duct work? Because they can give you a 96% efficient furnace, let's say a gas furnace or a geothermal unit. But if you're plugging it into, you know, a ductwork system, then really what efficiency, do you have? It's like putting a new heart in a 110-year-old person. I mean, the rest of the body, yeah, you got a good, great working heart, but the rest of it isn't paired, you know, with what's, you know, what's pumping the blood. So that new furnace should have ductwork that is designed for that furnace. And Iowans especially don't want to bite the bullet and say, oh, yeah, well, let's replace the ductwork. And in many cases, I mean, it'd be a tremendous amount of money. Could just replace the ductwork, but getting it to the point where it needs to be at the right size. So then you get into there to where somebody needs to know how to run dampers, and there's a lot of controls. So it can run into a lot of money. So you're either going to have to decide, do I want to do it all right, or do I want to put something high efficiency, but it's not going to be 96%. Efficient. It may only be 60-70%, even though the unit itself is very high, but since it's going through old ductwork. So we as Iowans are going to have to start kind of, you know, relooking at our thought process and think, you know, if we're going to do it, let's just do it all at the same time and get it done correctly. Because there's so much technology in the heating and cooling industry. It's amazing how fast this stuff's changed.
Right. You're always a ray of sunshine.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. Billy Downer.
But there are other options too beyond ductwork that we've talked about.
Right.
And we're going to go to a break here pretty quickly. But briefly, I mean, you have talked about radiant heating from the floor,
mini splits, all kinds of different things. Right. There's so many options out there now, especially with the newer technologies. These ductless mini splits, you see them a lot of times on remodeling jobs. It looks something similar to what you would see in a motel. That's not correct. But, you know, when you go into a motel, they have a little wall unit by the window. Mm-hmm. It, you know, that kind of helps people jog their mind, see what it
is.
Understand. But they're very good for especially older buildings. You can zone things, you know, like say you have one room, you know, cooler or warmer. Since you don't have the ductwork, you're using more of like, say, transom or grills and things like that to move air.
All right. So you do have options.
There's a lot of options, yeah.
More options than most of us can wrap our minds around. We will be getting to your calls in just a second. My guest is home improvement expert Bill McAnally. We've been talking about furnaces so far this hour, but of course, Bill will answer your questions about any home improvement issues you may be facing. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. 866-780-9100 or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. I'm here with our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, and you are welcome to join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we're going to start with an email from Barb. She says, which foam insulation would be the best option, closed cell versus open cell for a garage with 2x4 studs? Garage is heated, has vinyl siding over plywood sheeting and attached to the house.
That's a real good question. What it comes down to is either one of those products are going to be good for a garage. Closed cell has a higher R value per inch of depth. If I were you, even though it's 2x4, I would spray, if you did decide to go to closed cell, spray it completely to full depth. But the big key is for the foams we've been finding out last couple years. We've been working with Alliant Energy and Mid-American and some other utility companies and doing some educational training. So we've been able to ask builders what they've been seeing. And surprisingly, a lot of the builders that have been using foam are starting to shy away from it, not the product, but because of the installation. There's a lot of science behind the sprayed foams. You just can't go out and hire somebody that just picked up a machine last week at an auction is going to go out and start spraying walls. It's very scientific. You have to know surface temperatures, moisture contents. You have to know if there how much dirt and dust is on the surfaces that you're going to be spraying. And the person that's spraying it has to know what temperatures the hose can be exposed to. There's so much there. So what we've done is we've asked builders, okay, now what are you seeing? And a lot of them are seeing shrinkage. And by shrinkage, I mean once the foam is installed, maybe not right away, and maybe a week, maybe even right away, but sometimes a few weeks, the foam is shrinking. It's pulling away from the wood surfaces. So the worst possible thing you can have happen is if it pulls away from the sides or the top and bottom. And what can happen then is any warm, moist air that's in that garage can go past the edges of the foam, and then it will get back on the backside of the foam, the outside surface. If that happens, then that foam will do its job, and it will keep that surface cold. Then you're going to get condensation. And if it's an OSB or plywood, that would be your first condensing surface. You can have moisture. You could possibly have rot. So especially in a garage, they're going to be very high moisture content unless you have a fan designed for your garage. The correct amount of cubic feet in that garage has to go out so many minutes at a rate of so many cubic feet per minute to get that moisture out. You know, we tend to insulate our garages because we like the comfort. But now all of a sudden we see if we don't get the moisture out, garage doors are freezing down to the slabs. And then all of a sudden the opener can't pull it up. And we're just seeing really poor indoor air quality. And sometimes we get a positive pressure inside the garage, which pushes the moisture and any gases that are in that garage into the house or into the attic sometimes, because that may be where the attic access is. I know it seems like a lot of information, but what it comes down to is you want to make sure that that installer, if you pick the foam to put in the walls, that installer has had a lot of training, and not just from that company that sold them the unit. You want to make sure it's from a third-party company and ask for a lot of references, and then ask, hey, have you ever taken your walls apart and see what you actually have? We just did a test wall about a month or so ago just to see what was happening with the foams. And only one out of four of these wall cavities that we sprayed actually would pass an inspection for proper installation. Some in a 2x4, we had in some cases only 2 inches of foam because it expanded so fast the air had no place to go, and then it had a huge void in the wall. So there is a lot to foam. When it first came out, I thought, you know, this everything's going to just fall by the wayside. This is just going to be it. We'll be all done. But like anything else, I think it's a little bit too good to be true in some cases. Now, if you get a really good installer, you know, I've used three or four different ones. It's perfect because they've gone through the training and they're very careful at what they do.
Let's go to the phones now. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. Ryan is on the line from Marshalltown. Hi, Ryan.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
I was wondering what specifically I should be expecting the furnace servicer to do when they come for their annual service. Last year, I had someone in from what I thought was a quite reputable company come in, and, well, they basically switched off the furnace, shoved a shutback hose in it, and rooted around a little bit, then unscrewed the wires from the terminals and screwed them back on, and handed me an $80 bill.
Okay. Well, you know, you can – that's I guess would probably be your very basic test. What you may want to ask them is turn it – let's just turn it around and say, okay, now I'm going to have you come out and check my furnace. What kind of things are you going to be looking for? I would go at it from that side and, you know, check with three or four different companies. Say, you know, I'm thinking of switching and using someone every year to do my service work. And a lot of times that's a company's bread and butter, so they're going to want to be working with you. Ask them what they're going to do. Are you going to check to make sure that the fan is properly lubricated? Are you going to be looking to make sure there's no combustion gases, that you're going to, that the vent pipes are sealed, there's no cracks? Are you going to make sure that the possibly the condensate line is not plugged, and where's the condensate line going to? Is the intake and exhaust, are they clear? Are there any cracks possibly in the exhaust line, in the plastic? Has somebody dropped something on it? Are you going to look, go up into the rooms and make sure that all of the rooms have proper proper louvers, registers? You know, make sure that to tell the homeowner, kind of walk them through the system and say, you know, your room here is not going to be working properly if you have this big dresser over the top of the register. You know, kind of a little bit more homeowner education than what you received, because homeowners, just like myself, we need to be reminded every once in a while of things to look for, especially when the cooling season comes up. We have an expectation of privacy, so a lot of times we'll close our drapes. When we close the drapes, now when the heat comes on, the warm air can't get to the glass. Now we've got water running all over the windows, because the air can't get to the glass. So at night we do want to open the drapes a little bit, even though we may, you know, decide not to because of privacy. Well, okay, well, then a window can only do so much, and you're going to have moisture. Those are the kind of things that, you know, they should be going over with you. You know, think of the whole heating and cooling system as a system, and not just a few little wires and, you know, making sure the thermostat's working. They want to make sure the whole thing is working to give you the comfort that you've come to expect. And some will say, you know, we have a service that we will test the ducts, and we will see how much leakage there is, or see if you need to have some adjustments so that you can get air to a certain room, and maybe just something where they install a little damper. That's the kind of service that the good heating and cooling people do. And some people take offense to that. I mean, they do. They say, well, they're trying to just sell me something. No, they're trying to make it so that you actually have basically the same temperature in every room and the right humidity. You know, they may say to you, you know, why do you have this humidifier attached to your furnace, and why is it running? And will they check that humidifier for you to make sure that it's not just full of, you know, gunk? You know, because some homes do need a humidifier. Most of the new homes don't, because they're already tight enough. We're trying to exhaust excess moisture. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things tied to that check, because it's heating, ventilation, and air conditioning. It's just not, you know, hey, let's just check the furnace for a couple little things, make sure there's no carbon monoxide. It's that whole system, and that's what they should be looking at.
All right, Ryan, I hope that gives you a good list to work on. This is a question from Gerald. He says, what's your advice on an annual check for geothermal?
Well, on the geothermal, you know, probably most of them have the access for a banana diagnostic tool. So I would have that, you know, heating and cooling person that is familiar with geothermal. There are a lot of contractors out there that don't like geothermal, because there's sometimes it seems like it's newer technology, but it isn't that much different. There's not that as many things to check. So you may want to be checking to make sure that your loop temperatures are correct, the incoming and outgoing temperatures of the fluids. There, you may want to make sure that there's not a lot of extra condensation on any, say, some brass parts, and where's that moisture going? There's some, you know, some electrical issues that you may want to have checked. Other than that, they're kind of, you know, basically are they all? It's just a big refrigerator. And so, you know, they would check to make sure the compressor's working correctly, and that there's, you know, the proper amount of voltage, make sure there's nothing going on there. But the nice thing about the geothermal units, especially the newer ones, is they have advanced so much in the last 5 years that the diagnostics on them have changed so much. And the person that will look at it has had to keep up on it. That's the nice thing about it, is they have to stay current in their education. Some of the older furnaces, you know, you see people work on them that have worked on the same stuff for 30 years. So that's an advantage I see. A lot of people don't see it as an advantage, but they have to keep up on their education for them.
All right, let's get back to the phones. Mary is on the line from Waukee. Hi, Mary.
Hi, I have a question regarding a humidifier. My townhome was built in 2003. Last winter, the air was extremely dry, and just wondered, are there different sizes and an approximate cost, please?
I'm not really sure what, you know, the costs are. It does just depend on the size. What you want to do is you want to have somebody come and take a look at see if you're in 2003. I doubt if your ductwork was sealed, you know, taped and sealed like the new energy codes require that all new ones are. But your home may be, when it was built in 2003, the reason it's so dry in the winter and that is because it's probably very leaky. So it's letting a lot of, in the winter, you know, the drier air into the house. The humidifiers, there are humidifiers that kind of stand alone. Those are probably the better ones. They sit on a floor, and you can adjust the percentage of moisture. Like, say, if you want the home to be at my house is usually around 40 to 42% year-round. So if you want to keep your house at somewhere in that range, you can adjust it on the controls. Those units run, I think they're about $1,500 just for the unit. It's SANI, and I wish the caller would tell me which brand it is, but it's Santa Flow or something like that. Some of the Sahara units are out there too, but the ones that just attach the ductwork, you know, off to the side.
Santa Dry.
There we go. Thank you. Gosh, you're quick with that. Yeah, the Santa Dry units. But, you know, they're a little bit easier to control. Me personally, I'd rather spend the money on that as opposed to, say, you know, countertops and drapes and carpet. I'd rather make sure the air is very good in my home. So especially if you have some, you know, respiratory issues, because a lot of those can tie into excessive dryness as well. So I would look at, you know, something that is digitally controlled so you can control the humidity and that is sized for your house. So when you have a person identified, make sure that they come over, take a look at your home, and make sure it is sized correctly for the air handling unit, which is usually your furnace, the size of the fan and how often it's going to run so that you can get your air where you want it. Humidifiers, you know, we don't want to buy just the one with the wheels that are sitting off to the side. You know, there's no control on that. And usually it's just one room. You want something that's tied to your heating and cooling unit, and it's a high quality. Not, you know, that when you're dealing with pumping moisture into a house, it should be the highest of quality, not just something that they slap onto the side and say, hey, here you go.
All right, Mary, thanks a lot for your call. Let's try to get one more or maybe even two more calls in before the break. Lynn is up next in Iowa City. Hi, Lynn.
Hi there.
Hi.
I have a question about concrete. New concrete driveway poured this summer. They finished pouring about the 1st of June. And then by the end of August, I have a hairline crack across one section of it.
Okay.
And a couple weeks later, a crack started in another section. And the crack, on the edge I can see, the crack does go all the way through. Now, is it reasonable to expect it to crack or not to crack?
It's very reasonable to expect it to crack. Concrete will always crack. In a lot of cases, it's cracked all over the place, but you haven't seen it yet. Was there a reinforcement rod in the concrete?
Pardon me?
Was there any steel reinforcement rod in the concrete?
Yes, that was used.
Well, yeah, you know, that's the thing is, since the rod is in there, the cracks a lot of times are more of like expansion and contraction, and especially it depends on the type of day when you poured the mix. There's so many variables in there, but concrete, you know, that's one guarantee. Concrete's always guaranteed to crack. And if it was sawed, if they did saw cuts, like say every, I don't know how big your garage is, but every 10 feet or so, you know, a lot of times that's where the crack will occur. A lot of times if you don't saw it, it's going to just crack randomly where the stresses are, and the reinforcement rod is in there to keep it so that when it does crack, that it's not going to go up and down. So usually it's 99% of the time it's just cosmetics, and that's why they make the you know, the relief cuts in concrete. When we pour sidewalks, when we cut that, it's I think it's really neat that when you cut that every, say, 4 or 5 feet on a sidewalk, soon as you're cutting it, a lot of times you can see the crack forming right at that on the edge of the sidewalk where it's fine. You've relieved that stress. So, no, it's very reasonable to expect cracks.
All right, Lynn, thanks a lot for your call. And we'll try to squeeze one more in here. Kirk is on the line in Iowa City. Hi, Kirk.
Hi, thanks for this show. It's great. We're converting a outdoor porch into the house, and they want to spray closed-cell poly on the underside of the roof decking. Do we need ventilation, or can they go tight to the roof decking?
They can go tight to the roof decking. Be sure, again, there to make sure that you have a very good installer to do that. There's two ways to do it. You can vent it, and what they usually do is leave like a one-inch space. You would have to put like some plywood or metal or something up to give you a one-inch gap, and then they would fill the rest of the cavity with spray foam. That's a vented roof. The other is just a hot roof where you fill the complete cavity and you shut off any chance of air. And, you know, you hear all kinds of things about how the shingle companies won't warranty and they won't do this. But really what it comes down to is it's exactly the same as a structural insulated panel system. They are completely 100% foam systems. You build houses, roofs, and everything out of them, and they still warranty on top of that. And I always bring up, well, you know, how many times you hear somebody getting a really good warranty payment from a shingle company anyway. You hate to say it, but normally you don't. It's hard to get. So I'd fill it up.
All right, Kirk, thanks a lot for your call. We are going to take a short break. We'll be back to answer more of your questions in just a moment. My guest is our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally. The number to call to join our conversation is 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or post on our Facebook page. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Home Improvement Day. Bill McAnally is here with us this hour answering your questions. And you can join the conversation at 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. John is on the line next in Humboldt. Hi, John.
Yes, I have a pole building. Part of it's heated and part of it's not. The unheated portion is lined with metal, and I get a lot of condensation. I would like to insulate that. Do I need a vapor barrier?
Yeah, you would need a vapor barrier. What kind of insulation are you looking at?
The original part of the building was blown in, and that's probably what I would do on the ceiling and then put bats in the wall.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you still need a vapor barrier, especially because, you know, if you're bringing in equipment and you're generating a lot of moisture, you would really want to make sure that you use a high quality vapor barrier and make sure all the edges, all the seams and edges are sealed, not just overlapped, but taped.
Okay.
And caulked.
How thick a poly are you talking about then for the vapor barrier?
Well, at least a 6 mil.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's better to use the black 6 mil. It seems to, even though it's not going to be out in the sun, or you know, it just seems to, like it's been performing a little bit better. Some people are going with a product called CertainTeed membrane. That's what we use on houses now. It's a it's the reason I'm saying CertainTeed membrane. That's the only product that has the capabilities. What it does is, if let's say you did get a lot of moisture in that wall cavity or roof cavity, that the pores open up on it, allow it to dry to the inside as well. Otherwise, you know, you want to make sure and use, there's a product called TuTuf, T-U-T-U-F. That's very good. It's you can't put your finger through it. I mean, it's really good poly. A lot of them are using Stego products, which S-T-E-G-O. Commercial guys are using that underneath their slabs. Most of those are 8 or 10 mil. But the thing is that you're never going to have any holes in it. If you're really happy with the section that you've done and you're not getting condensation in that area, I would replicate exactly what you did there.
Okay.
Because if you're not seeing any condensation at all in the part that already is done, I would do exactly what you did there. Because every building's different and every area is different. And you know, how you operate that heated and cooled area is different, so I would just do exactly what you did before if it's working good for you.
I know there's a lot of air infiltration with the metal sheeting and all that. I mean,
yeah.
there's it's it leaks. There's no question.
Yeah, it does. And you know, what some will do is they will cut sheets of, like, say, 1-inch foam, the extruded foam, like the paint green and blue foam, and they will put that in against the metal. I just did a building similar to what you're talking about, and that's what I did. And then I just kind of used the metal as more of a drainage plane, rain screen kind of system. Yeah, they are leaky, but in some cases, though, that's good, you know, because that allows that air to get out from behind the metal and dry off.
All right, John, thanks a lot for your call. Debbie's up next in Albia. Hi, Debbie.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
We have a corn stove, but we've been burning wood pellets in it, and it vents through a metal pipe on the outside. Do we need someone to come and clean the creosote out of it?
Yes. Yeah, you want to do that every year for sure. And then what they will do is they will also inspect the pipe to make sure there hasn't been any corrosion on the pipe, because if, it depends how much moisture's been in there. I know it should be a stainless steel pipe, but sometimes, you know, pipe will be purchased that is not stainless steel, so it could be rusting, and then that may allow some carbon monoxide or even the possibility of a flame getting somewhere where it shouldn't. But, yeah, I would have that checked before you start using it this fall.
All right. And here's an email from Jonathan. He says, we have an older roof on a milking barn. Part of the roof, tin roof, was torn off in the storms on the 19th of September. The tin was nailed right into the old wood shingles, which were rotten in some parts. We're taking the roof down to the rafters and trusses, which are about 2x4s, 24 inches apart. What's the best thing to use on top of the rafters to attach the tin? The barn had 1x8s for the shingles. Do we do that? 2x4s, plywood?
It depends on what you want to do for cost. You know, if it's an old milking barn, you're not going to heat or, you know, cool it. Some they do, some they don't. Probably the easiest thing to do is just go ahead and put, you know, 2x4s or across horizontally, perpendicular to the roof trusses, and nail your metal to that. If you are going to go with, say, OSB or plywood on top of the roof, nailing the metal into the OSB is not going to hold. So you are going to have 2x4s or one. In some cases, they use 1x4s, but that's kind of flimsy. You're better off just, you know, doing it right and putting 2x4s flat all the way across that. And it seems overkill, and you're going to have somebody say, oh, that's stupid, but that's okay. I'm used to that. So, but go ahead. You know, that's what I would do, because then it's solid, and I don't know what the pitch is for your metal. Because I've had some steel roofs I've seen where they were going, say, 9 foot on center with their trusses, and even when they take 2x4s, 24 inches on center, with that span, they collapse under the snow loads on a 3 and a 4/12 pitch. So I would I would just go with the 2x4s.
All right.
Leave it open so you can see the metal.
All right, back to Anthony in Bettendorf on the phones. Hello, Anthony.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. My son just bought a house here. It's a 750-square-foot house. The problem is it's got a very nice 95% efficiency furnace, but it's 90,000 BTU.
Whoa.
And it just, yeah, it cycles continuously, of course. And we've made the problem worse by putting new thermal pane windows in all around. Is there any way to kind of throttle this thing back? It's on the lowest tap as far as the fan is concerned. We put a little enclosure over the thermostat, which helps a little bit, but is there any thermostat or timer device? He's a big boy. He can chill down a little bit just to slow it down. We'd like to keep the furnace.
You know, I'm sorry, but I would get something its size for that house. Yeah, that unit there, you know, that's awful big for 750 square foot. And like, you know, the thing is it should be for furnace to be sized correctly, and you probably know this already, but for furnace to be sized correctly on the coldest day of the year, that furnace should be running almost the whole time. And on the hottest day of the year, it should be trying to cool almost the whole time. Otherwise, you've oversized it. And like you say, it's cycling. There's nothing worse, especially on the cooling side of it cycling, because it's cool, but not still wet because it doesn't get a chance to dehumidify. So you're I mean, I can't imagine how uncomfortable that little place is, especially if it's halfway tight. Now that you put the windows in, I know what my engineer friend would say, well, we'll open the windows up. You know, that's the easiest way. But I'm sorry, but I don't know. I really don't know how they're going to throttle it down. I'm not a furnace person, and maybe they can with the model that you have. Maybe they can even swap out, I don't know, maybe they can swap out the fan or something. I don't know. If it was me, I'd just replace it and put the other one on eBay.
Right. Excuse me. Maybe you can find somebody to trade with.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Hey, there you go. That's an idea.
I don't have a big enough furnace. And yeah. I have it right now.
Hey, Charity's right here. You can. Right. I'll broker the deal for 10.
All right. Good luck with that, Anthony. Thanks a lot for your
That's
call.
Too bad.
Lisa's on the line next from Ackworth. Hi, Lisa.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
Oh, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, we had a company out here last week that gave us a list of all the things that's wrong with our furnace and recommended that we replace it. So I'm not sure if they're trying to sell me something new or if this is valid. So I want to read you a few of the things they said. Number one, and it's 12 years old. I guess that's probably all you need to know. The CO level is 7 parts per million. The blower run capacitator is weak, 4.9 out of 7.5 MFD. Burners are very rusty. Replace them. Inducer motor bearing is loud.
Okay. You know, it's kind of like those TV shows where they go around and go to different mechanics and see who tells you what's wrong with your car. I'd get another estimate because now you're talking a lot of money if you're going to be being replacing. I'd get one or two more. You know, it doesn't hurt to get estimates. You know, because I'm not there and I don't know. You know, I can't see this. I don't know how reputable everybody is, but I would get two or another one and maybe two more. Estimates just to have somebody come out because, we may be talking, $3,000 to $6,000. I don't know how the unit is. So, and you do want to ask them also, what about the ductwork? You know, what about the filtration system? You know, what size is this matched to the ductwork? Is it matched to the house? Kind of like the person that just Anthony that called a little bit ago. You know, we want to make sure this is going to keep you comfortable. So I would get a couple more estimates and play it safe. You know, we've got a lot of time yet before before you really do need that this furnace. Well,
we have some time.
Some time.
A few weeks.
Yeah, a few weeks, I guess. But I would get another couple estimates, so to play it safe, because they should all have the same readings, well, approximately the same readings, and they all should be saying, can you put up with the bearing? Of course, it could go out at any second, and it could go out on the worst day of the year, and then how are you going to get a service person there?
Right.
And so in some of these cases, yeah, it's justified to replace it.
A lot of furnaces fail on Christmas.
Yes, they do. Yeah.
All right. Dan is on the line next from Newton. Hi, Dan.
Hello. How are you?
Good. What's your question?
Well, our water heater is dying, and had a plumber come out, take a look. It looks like it will need to be replaced. And so we're trying to decide, do we go with the traditional tank heater, which will, according to our plumber, cost about $900, or should we go tankless?
Okay. What did your plumber say, just out of curiosity? Did he make a recommendation?
He did not.
Okay.
We're in an older home, a 1900 home, and so.
Oh.
Yeah. So we had the water lines replaced 3 years ago, so we've got good lines coming into the house.
Okay.
But the difference in cost, according to him, it'd be about 3 times more to go tankless than to go with the tank system.
To me, that's a no-brainer there because a lot of people I talk with, they aren't as happy with the tankless as they thought they would be.
Right.
And there are the issues. That's why I kind of wanted to see what the plumber said. Just the maintenance side of it is what's killing the reputation on them. And it's not the unit. It's the doggone water. Everybody has, all of a sudden some good days, bad days. There mm-hmm. might be enough sediment in your water that even after filter systems you would think would take a lot of it out can cause a lot of issues with the unit. And the cost alone, I don't see how you could ever recoup the difference. In fact, you never would. I don't think both of us put together would ever be able to do that. And the nice thing is you know, the tank type, it's just a no-brainer.
All right.
Just set them right in.
Yep. All right.
All right, Dan. Thanks a lot for your call. And let's get back to a couple of email questions. This one is from Dave. Our heat and cooling guy suggested a whole house air filtration system to help with family allergies.
Yep.
It removes up to 99.98% of all allergens from filtered air, traps particles as small as 0.1 micron in size, and it is pricey. Is that a good idea?
It depends on how, I guess, how many allergens are in the house, which everybody has a ton of them. It comes down to how susceptible you are. Maybe you have some respiratory issues, some health issues that you do need to have that kind of system. There's a lot of them out there, and you really want to do your research. Some of them aren't very good. They're more nationally, how should I say it, more nationally advertised. They're not as good as they say. Do a lot of consumer report research on these, because it is a big amount of money, and everyone should have fresh air coming in. But a lot of times it can be taken care of with something a lot less, and changing of lifestyle as well. You know, just even changing, getting rid of carpets and going to, say, ceramic and wood floors, a lot of times can be the difference, especially if you're at that stage, you may want to replace those things. It's you get two things out of it. You're going to have a lot less junk, I guess you would say, in the air and in the floor system, but then you're going to have better air.
All right. Here's a question from James. We're looking at finishing space in our basement and using carpeting. We normally don't have moisture problems there, but have once had some moisture when the sump pump failed. We wanted to use the plywood panels with the plastic offset backing under the carpeting to improve floor temperatures, but should we be concerned about mold under the panels?
Me personally, I would be very concerned. It looks like, I don't know how many square feet are in your basement, but it's kind of a half-inch tall Petri dish. It's nice and cool and wet. It doesn't matter if you've had a wet basement. What causes the mold usually in the basements is when you put carpet over the top of concrete, you're basically insulating the concrete to the cooler temperature below it. So what you would want to do if you're going to use carpet in the basement is you insulate the whole floor. And Green Building Advisor, Building Science Corporation, and FineHomeBuilding.com, they all have very good methods on how to insulate your floor with foam, with sleepers, and then put new sheeting down. This way you keep that temperature for the carpet, the room temperature, and it pretty much, what they say is it pretty much, gets rid of the chance of having any mold around the carpet.
All right. And then we're almost out of time, but let's slip this one in from Joel in Des Moines. I'm getting ready to replace my ancient furnace and have had one heating and cooling person recommend a heat pump. I know that's something you have brought up on occasion. So in 15 seconds, what do you think?
I like the heat pumps. You look at mini split heat pumps. You can do zoning. Get with your heating and cooling person and ask them if there's a chance, can I use them? They're very, very efficient, especially on the cooling cycle.
All right. And I also know that before you left, you wanted to mention there's an Iowa Energy Summit coming up.
Yeah, the Iowa Energy Summit, the Iowa Association for Energy Efficiency, is on November 4th and 5th. And so I want you to go look at that site and find out where it is, because we'd like to see you there. A lot of good presenters.
All right. It's in Altoona, by the way.
Yeah, well, thanks a lot. Now they know.
All right. We also put up the link to that on our Facebook page as well,
thanks.
The Iowa Energy Center Summit. Bill McAnally, thank you so much.
Thanks, Charity.
Bill McAnally, our home improvement expert, comes by once a month. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Coming up at noon today, it's River to River, and host Ben Kiefer is here with me now. Hi, Ben.
Hi, Charity. You know, it's a big day for the Affordable Care Act, otherwise known as Obamacare. We have these online health exchange marketplaces opening today. We're going to talk about what they mean for you, who they're really for, how to access them. We want to have a whole hour of people getting in touch with us with their questions, with their experiences, perhaps already on these online exchanges. So it's all about the implementation of the Affordable Care Act at noon, Charity.
All right, Ben, thanks a lot. And coming up tomorrow on Talk of Iowa, we'll go Bach to work with cellist Tony Arnone. And we'll also talk about the very first Heisman Trophy winner ever. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.